Kevin, thank you very much indeed. Our final speaker this evening is Annie Gascoigne. Annie is Head of Economic Policy at the Confederation of British Industry. She joined the CBI in April of last year and previously worked in Ernst & Young's economic advisory practice, delivering projects on a range of public policy issues. Before that, she started her career at the Treasury, working on a range of policy issues, including higher education, science and innovation funding, and carbon taxes. Annie.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Sean, and also to Helen for inviting me to speak to you all this evening. As Head of Economic Policy, I have the fortune to speak to businesses every day about tax issues and about the economy as well and how things are going. So I think that gives me a bit of insight, which I'm hopefully going to share with you today about businesses' views on tax reliefs, how they use those tax reliefs, and what really matters to them. And that kind of providing that business perspective, I think, is why I'm here to kind of give the additional view. And I hope that I'm not going to completely disagree with everything that the previous panelists have spoken about, but you can be the judge of that. But first of all, I wanted to kind of challenge the perception that the tax reliefs are the preserve of big businesses. And actually, as helpfully alluded to in Helen's presentation, reliefs available to businesses represent a relatively small proportion of the overall reliefs that are available through the tax system. And so I'm going to use some slightly different numbers, which relates to the tax expenditures rather than the structural reliefs. But of those kind of 180 or so principal reliefs that have been costed by HMRC, only 3% of those tax reliefs in expenditure terms result from reliefs from corporation tax. So actually, the remainder of those reliefs are more personal taxes, including the income tax reliefs and tax reliefs on VAT, for example, zero-rated VAT on food and children's clothing. So in the context of a business tax contribution, and this is some analysis we do each year to kind of tot up the total that businesses contribute to the exchequer, and that's not including things like income tax and VAT, which are obviously personal taxes, it's £205 billion. And so set against the tax expenditures, and as I say, that's a subset of the tax release, of £4.4 billion, that's actually a relatively small number compared to the total business tax contribution. And I would argue that those reliefs play a really important role in incentivising businesses to invest, expand and create jobs in the UK. But let's be clear, markets do not always work perfectly. And in some instances, leaving markets to their own devices will result in suboptimal outcomes, including underinvestment. And that impacts not only businesses, but their customers, individuals, employees and society more broadly. And so offering targeted and specific tax reliefs in order to incentivise specific behaviour, and I think this is a point made by all of the panellists that precede me, can help to create and grow activity that would otherwise not have happened. And that's ultimately what will help the UK to deliver on its economic objectives. And so now I want to kind of touch on a couple of the reliefs that have been mentioned earlier and how businesses perceive these. And on the R&D tax credit scheme, which I won't kind of explain in detail because I think most people in this room understand it, and also you've had quite a prelude from the previous speakers. But just to remind you, obviously, that the autumn budget at the end of last year, the Chancellor decided to increase that allowance from 11 to 12%. And actually, businesses believe that the R&D tax credit is an integral part of the wider innovation ecosystem. So alongside funding from bodies like Innovate UK and direct interventions, actually tax credits form an option within that. And actually, the variety and versatility of the funding mechanisms available is really integral to ensuring that, you know, projects get off the ground and those innovations, that research that's really at the starting stage really gets through to commercialisation. But it also makes the UK an attractive place to invest, and that's what we need to keep in mind, especially as we go into a period of, or continue into a period of uncertainty with Brexit looming around the corner. So another thing about the R&D tax credit is obviously the above-the-line R&D expenditure credit, and that I think is worth kind of delving into a little bit, because that allows businesses to recognise the R&D tax credit before pre-tax profits. So that means that loss-making companies should also benefit from the relief. And that's really important to support the UK's kind of growing high-tech sector and smaller businesses that are particularly characterised by high upfront investment costs, fast revenue growth, but actually it takes them a number of years before any profit is realised. And so actually building those kind of nascent industries and nascent businesses is really important. And actually, so here's some stats from the HMRC's own data, which R&D expenditure used to claim R&D tax relief was $22.9 billion in 2015-16. And apologies for that it's 2015-16, and obviously we're now in 2018, but that's the latest data that they have available. And it's worth noting that 20% of that R&D expenditure was by SMEs, and 40% of the expenditure was by businesses under 10 years of age or under. So it really is about incentivising that investment in the new businesses of the future. But we can't only focus on what we do here in the UK, and in an ever-increasingly globalised world, we always have to have an eye on what other countries are doing too, and where we stand internationally when it comes to the competitiveness of our business environment here in the UK. And so whilst the UK it's often boasted that the UK has the lowest headline rate of corporation tax in the G20. Effective tax rates, and by that I mean the tax rate which takes into account allowances and deductions, including reliefs, and the overall tax framework, including the administration, transparency and clarity of HMRC, also have a big impact on business investment decisions. So here, the patent box is a good example as a policy that was intended to drive increases in foreign direct investment, supporting job creation in both foreign and domestic firms. But it's important to note that other countries around the world have implemented very similar measures, and some have more competitive rates than ours, including in Ireland, but also some have a wider definition of the assets which can qualify for that lower tax rate as well. And it's worth pointing out that this isn't an either-or choice between foreign investment and domestic investment. There's a wealth of research that actually shows that investment by foreign firms leads to clustering of activity and can also boost the innovation of capacity of domestic firms as well. So actually drawing in that inward investment from abroad is a critical part of supporting our domestic economy and our domestic businesses as well. The UK's capital allowances regime, another one that's been mentioned in the slides before me and by the other panellists. And as I say, as Helen pointed out, that's categorised by HMRC as a structural element of the tax system rather than a tax expenditure, so i.e. A choice that government has made about incentivising particular types of behaviour. But I think what's interesting about this is that capital allowances can be really crucial for infrastructure providers. So those firms that are providing the next generation of railways, of road transport potentially if we move down that route, and all of our kind of domestic infrastructure. And that's because they're able to deduct a significant amount of the upfront investment associated with major projects from their tax liability. And ultimately, that allows them to lower their cost of capital, increasing the viability of those investments and also attracting private investment into those businesses and into those projects. And additionally to the kind of overall framework of capital allowances, a specific tax deductibility of corporate interest also, we've heard from our members, helps to attract that long-term investment finance needed, because ultimately infrastructure providers are not looking for a short-term loan. They're looking for that long-term investment for projects that could last many, many years to actually build, and it can take a long time for those projects to yield returns. And so you really need to, as an infrastructure provider, you really need to find those financiers who are going to be in it for the long haul. But it's worth pointing out that actually, in terms of our capital allowances, while a really important part of the tax system, remain relatively uncompetitive internationally. And actually, some analysis we did a couple of years ago shows that the UK has the lowest present value of capital allowances in the G20. And actually, the introduction of the enhanced annual investment allowance was a kind of welcome example of a measure that will kind of drive investment in small and medium-sized firms. But there is clearly still more to be done in that area. And finally, I kind of want to touch on what's often talked about is the rate of relief, and that's sort of the headline-grabbing issue. But actually, what matters to business, yes, of course, the rate of relief plays an important part in investment decisions, but the administration and the access that businesses have to those reliefs is really important to creating a supportive business environment. And so actually some more recent announcements, including at the autumn budget, the announcement of the R&D tax expenditure advance clearance service, which allows those people claiming to get greater certainty sooner over their project financing, is a really welcome step, because actually what I hear from businesses often is that the time it takes to go through various funding rounds, grant funding on the R&D side, as well as the process for applying for the tax credit, can actually really damage the viability of their project in the long term. And similarly, enhanced capital allowances is another area where the application could really benefit from some simplification. In this example, businesses often find that the qualifying lists of eligible technologies often fail to meet industry standards. And that means that often the kind of cutting edge, latest productivity enhancing technology, particularly in energy efficiency, which is of course something we want to encourage the adoption of and the growth of that, that area, can sometimes fail to even qualify for a relief. So that's obviously something that could be looked at. I've also heard some similar issues with how the patent box can be accessed and the ease with which businesses can access that. But ultimately, what does this point to? It points to having a clear, simple, and transparent way in which business can access reliefs. And as I say, that administration is a critical part. You can't just kind of design a policy and then leave it. You really need to push through the delivery in order for it to be effective. But it also provides greater certainty and stability, and that is another thing I hear from businesses time and time again, which is around that creating that sense of a stable and clear path for the tax system. And it's really crucial for maintaining competitiveness of the business environment. Finally, I kind of want to touch on some principles that we often talk about in the CBI around tax reliefs. And businesses understand and fully support the principle that any reliefs must be consistent with national economic policies. I don't think any businesses think that a relief specifically targeted at one business is a good relief. And that tax reliefs, whilst an important lever in the government's toolbox, must be considered with the right principles and processes in place. And so actually, this is all about doing tax policy and the design of the reliefs in the right way. And as I've said earlier, the sort of stability and predictability in the tax system are just as important to businesses as the rates of tax themselves. So when granting reliefs, government needs to follow that clear evidence-based approach that considers both the economic, social, and environmental impacts of reliefs. And so I think it's been touched on by previous panelists that, you know, the evidence base needs to be built on, and I think businesses would fully support that idea as well. But also businesses recognise that the tax system needs to adjust over time to the way we live, the way we work, and the way we do business, and what reliefs that might be granted today aren't necessarily always fit for the future. And so that's why ongoing monitoring and evaluation is really an important part of the process of policy making. And actually a good example of this was the recent patient capital review conducted by the government, which considered ways in which both the tax system, but also the spending and supply side of the system, including the British Business Bank, could support innovative firms by providing them with access to finance in order to scale up. We know this is a big problem. Actually, the patient capital review document that the government put together set out quite a clear set of evidence for the problem. And ultimately, what the review concluded, and it looked at the effectiveness of some of the reliefs, including EIS and SIES, as well as the entrepreneurs' relief. And the result was that actually some of the reliefs were tweaked in small ways in order to help them retain their intended purpose. But importantly, and I think this is importantly, tweaking reliefs to make sure that they deliver is right, but deciding to scrap them completely and start from scratch is not always the best approach, because it does create that instability and churn in the tax system, which makes it so difficult for businesses to plan their activities going forward. So I'd just like to end by saying thank you, everyone, for listening, and I hope you've found the sort of business perspective interesting. And of course, I'll welcome any questions in that portion of this evening. Thank you.